Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
I'm Andy.
I'm Mercedes.
And this is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. Tonight, we're going to be a little all over the place, which is the best part about having an off-road power couple, basically, is how I'm going to term you guys. I hope the listener and viewer is ready for a bit of a ride tonight. I moved my notes to the other screen, which messed me up there for a second.
You look like you're just glancing off.
It's like I have all the media assets to my right, and I put the show notes to the left tonight. And I was like, I guess I don't normally do that because my brain went to the right. Anyway, as always, we're socially distanced. I'm still in the Midwest. Ross still in the Northeast. And Andy and Mercedes are in the Pacific Northwest.
Yep.
We are.
That's always a guess on where the guest is going to be. Sometimes I know
one of our favorite games.
Sometimes it's like, yeah, they move around a little bit,
right? Especially with like Richard and Ashley, it's like, what hemisphere are you in?
Right.
We would have been in Wisconsin 2 weeks ago.
So. Yeah, I was going to say sometimes. See, exactly. Never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they travel quite a bit more internationally than we do, so we know them both well.
Well, yep. Sweet. Ross, you've made a decision.
Yes, two things on my docket for updates tonight. I made a decision. The Lexus is staying after much deliberation. Kind of just gave into not wanting to backtrack on vehicle age and mileage and whatnot. And also, frankly, I have so much time and emotional investment in this thing already. So it is. It's going to hang around. We're going to do some other things to it. And yeah, it's I don't know, it's too good of a truck to let go. So, and frankly, I don't need anything bigger.
It is. Are those Light Force Genesis lights up front?
They are, and there is also a worn winch on this truck that that Andy may or may not have something to do with.
I see that. Yeah, we got the same lights on our one of our Pajeros. They're good lights.
They are. I almost feel bad using them. Like, obviously, never in the presence of another vehicle or anything, but I'm like, God, if there's a deer or something down the road, they're not going to have a good time.
No.
Yeah. They're killer. So the Lexus is staying. And the other update. Yes, that is before
it's like having two sons on the front of a vehicle.
Exactly.
It's great. The first time I turned them on, I sat there for a minute and was just like, okay, lights have come a long way since I was running. Like, I swapped them out for, I had Hella 500s on before, which are like, they're like the gold standard of cheap, you know, auxiliary rally lights, and they're fine, but this is just, it's different. Like, it's the sun, surface of the sun. Yeah. So that's the Lexus update. More to come as things happen. We're trying to plan a couple local trips, and the only other news in my household is that the Hummer EV arrived today for my week of pretending that I'm saving the environment and actually doing the exact opposite. We are, at least as of now, intending to take this up to Massachusetts on Saturday to run through some state forests and try to find trouble where the Jag SVR couldn't go it was like right around this time last year.
You mentioned this last time about how you're going to run up the same road as the Jag. I was like, is that road wide enough? Because the Jags look big on that little road.
I'll let you know.
9,200 pounds of environmentalism right there.
Yes. It is. It's comical. And it's weird. Like, it's not, and this is one for the record books, but it doesn't look as big in person as it does in pictures. But
hey,
it is so obscene. And it's kind of awesome. Like, it's kind of awesome in person, but I'm like, God, it is just, it's so irresponsible. And it's so silly. But
see, I find it very interesting that was your takeaway, is it's not as large as it appears to be in photos in person. Because when the dealer near me has three on the lot,
mm-hmm.
they look enormous. And they've moved them to different spots to like try to minimize the size a little bit. They look huge. They look so big.
I think, yes, and it is not a small vehicle by any means, but I think the normalizing of the 2500, 3500, you know, hood line that is basically at my face is
normal.
Takes the relativity out of things. You know, when the H1 and the H2 came out, they were huge. And now it's like, I mean, my dad's Silverado 2500 dwarfs this thing, you know, And I was
an associate editor for a publication in the hobby industry when the Hummer H2 first came out. And I worked with a guy who wrote the Wheels column for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in Wisconsin. And he got a nacho cheese yellow H2 vehicle that week. And we all stood at the window of the building and were like, look at the size of that thing. It's ridiculous. It's right? so huge. And now the Hummer EV is like, man, this thing is huge. It's like crazy.
Yeah, we have jumped shark on vehicle size, which is part of the reason that the Lexus is staying, because a Land Cruiser won't fit down some of my trails. So, yeah, God, that thing is just...
There it is.
I don't know if there is more of a moment in time vehicle than that.
Seriously, that was a... that's a good way to put it.
That was a post 9/11 ostentatious, like, fuck you to everybody else in the world kind of thing.
Yeah. Dude, my favorite part of that quick Google image search is every single result had rims on it. I had to go, I had to dig to find the one with the stock wheels.
And my dad had those 8-lug H2 wheels fit on the 2500s and 3500s, and he had them on his 2008 Silverado, and they were awesome. It's like the right backspacing and everything. So anyways, that's all my updates. Chris, speaking of big, large GM produced vehicles, Suburban things.
Oh, it's like, wait a minute, where are you going with this?
How's he gonna land this one? Yeah.
well, we're talking about normalizing of size. I don't think of the Suburban as big. Like, I'm a 1500 Suburban. That's not big. Like,
it's lengthy.
It is, and it really is. It is big. Like, I had a large wholesale store over the weekend as I was leaving with my strawberries and bananas and all the extra stuff that I have to buy the kids. As I was backing out, a 2500 GMC Sierra was like pulling out as well, and I was like, he didn't look that big to me. Like, it was just a normal size truck, and I was like, oh no, that's actually the heavy duty version. So anyway, we'd been teasing that I might have been starting to look for a different vehicle, but instead of doing that, I basically went out and drove the Suburban a whole bunch. I took the kids out to a couple of different spots nearby. The glory of trying to off-road in Kansas, I love when the new people join, because they're always like, what are the good trails? There are no trails. There are literally no trails. They're just people's streets. And then we have these things called minimum maintenance roads, which sometimes are at the end of dirt roads that nobody takes care of. When I went out with the kids recently, we did avoid all of the minimum maintenance roads because it was a little squishy and a little wet. And so, like, traveling by yourself, yes, I had the Mack tracks in the back, but like, didn't want to risk anything. So we went chasing sunsets, basically, is what I told the kids we were going to do. We left at like 2 p.m. Sun goes down around 5:30, right? We'll try and get up. We'll find it. Literally, the clouds rolled in as we were approaching, and it I used a ton of Photoshop to try to pull any color out of these images.
I mean,
I was going to say that's a great image.
Yeah, it's like a GM, like, press room image. Especially that one. Shit. God, they got to hire you. But isn't that kind of like the Murphy's Law of trips with a dedicated purpose?
Yes.
Like, I went on a couple of hikes where it was like, we're going to get up to the top of the mountain, we're going to be able to see the valley and forever. And you get up there and it's just fog. So
that's we got stories like that.
That's exactly. A pretty picture though.
Well, especially up there you do. And so, like, I had the good news is the kids had a great time. That spot really wasn't that far away. And it's a section of the Flint Hills that not a lot of people know that the Flint Hills are in Kansas. They just think of Kansas like near I-70 and then just they're out of the state. But kind of like Emporia down towards Wichita, there's a section of just like rolling hills, a lot of prairie. At the right time of the year, it's absolutely beautiful. And the good news is it's only like an hour and a half out. So like the kids know we can get down there. And typically I like to get down there and then we'll go camp at like one of the state fishing lakes. But this was just like, we were short on time. We didn't have a ton to do. So I was like, let's go take sunset photos. And they were like, yeah, what else are we going to do? And so we had a great time. They had a good time. But what I ended up coming away with is how much more I enjoyed the Suburban than I realized. once I was in, like, especially on rougher terrain, like in the city streets, you don't really see the benefit of the mag ride. Going on a gravel road, all of a sudden you see, definitely see the benefits of a mag ride.
Always forget that thing as mag. That's
yeah. And so just having a great time, and we let them get out and let them throw rocks and creeks and stuff, and just they had a blast. And so I think I'm definitely going to keep the Suburban. I think I'll take a more of an economical budget, and kind of I'm probably gonna put a rack on it. There's not a lot of options.
Yeah, this is a call out to the aftermarket in general to start supporting this era Suburban, because the same thing is going to happen in 5 years that happened to the 800s and the early 900s. Is they become increasingly affordable.
If I could find a Slee off-road like style slim bumper for the front of the Suburban, I absolutely would do that.
Yeah, I'm
gonna have to go. It's 2017. I was trying to find the Slee bumper that I love.
Yeah, you don't want to get like a ranch hand bumper or something.
That's no, like I don't.
200 pounds to the front.
I love the ARB like square look, but like there's nothing square about the Suburban. It's like all the edges are kind of rounded until you get to the very back. So like, I feel like those don't really look as good. And of course, now the image that I was looking for disappeared. On me. I'm having a great Google search night.
I think I know what you're talking about. Man, Slee used to make a kit for the hundreds that I think was just called like the Yes Kit or something. And it was like bumper, suspension, sliders, skids. Oh, so good.
Dude, that sounds fantastic. And I'd say yes to all of that. So I guess I'm giving Slee free advertising that, because it's even a like a branded photo, which is just a subtle come right under the nose of the grill on the Suburban. I just don't want all this extra stuff. And even the one I sent you the other day, Ross, had all those extra like fog light holes below. Mm-hmm. And the circle ones just looked weird. And then the square light pods, I was just like, it didn't seem right.
I don't know, man. If approach angle and protection is a big thing, I'd wager that there's a fab shop in your area that could whip something up.
I mean, my move is probably just to go find a Z71 bumper and move on. So
that too.
Yeah. Those are a little harder to find.
17?
Yeah. 17.
Yeah. I was just looking at some options here.
Not great.
Oh yeah. So yeah. Might be an option. Fab Force Vengeance front bumper.
Okay.
Have a Google at that one.
Oh no.
I gotta figure out how to spell vengeance.
That's interesting. That's not as bad as I was expecting. So many of these things are like SEMA, you know, like friggin' Star Destroyer looking things.
Right. Yeah, Fab Force makes a lot of bumpers outside of the grumper, which is what they're known for. So.
Interesting.
Okay. I get confused by the bucks. Well, I get confused by the price. The one I found said only 70. It's like, wait, what?
I'll buy 20 of them at 70.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Shit, I'll be a wholesaler for 70 bucks.
So not quite the right era of truck, but
not enough lights.
Not enough. That's the other thing, is I don't really need the extra lighting. But I wouldn't mind like a stealth light bar behind the grill. Like that's, as I've started to like think about modifying, I'm remembered the things I didn't like that I did to the Land Cruiser. And I did have those big round lights up front, but like for me, I just don't have a lot of trips where I'm in the dark traveling at night. And yes, it would be very beneficial in that scenario, but the rest of the time, the look of it, I ruined my Land Cruiser is what I'm saying to me. I liked my old 80 roundness and it was great, but I ruined it with all the dumb lights and snorkel and all that fun stuff.
Ruined in one capacity.
Does that mean that you're getting older or growing up at all?
I think it's just more I understand more of what I like and want. It's what it is.
Knowing what you like and don't like is important.
Yep.
Here, I got. This is what it was at the end. snorkel, yeah. Light.
Just to...
I need all that.
Yeah, lights and a snorkel. I'd say that's understated. You're still rocking the stock wheels on some what KO2s looks like, so...
Yeah, but then I have... Then I have this, though. So this is so clean.
Yeah.
Minimalist.
Yeah. I think I'm more of that style. Okay. And here I am talking about a rack for the Suburban.
Yeah, right. I don't know. This just to round out this conversation.
One or the other.
And yeah. Tie it back in. This reiterates the thing we always say, which is like the best off-roader is the one you have.
Right.
So.
What happens if you have more than one? Or two, or
they're all the best then.
Then they're all the best. Like then you just have options to choose from the best.
Yeah.
My favorite part of that is Mercedes did the segue for you there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Landed that one for me. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
So do you want to start with off-roaders you don't technically own that you borrowed for a rally?
Which one? Which rally?
Well, I know. That's the fun part.
Well, Chris, do you want to start in the land of Subaru or Jeep?
Jeep.
Jeep. Okay.
Jeep. Let's do it.
All right. So, Rebel.
All that right.
This past year's event.
Wait, no.
Yes. There it is. There she is. The beautiful high velocity 2023 Jeep Wrangler Rubicon 4xe plug-in hybrid.
That is the See It From Space color.
It does. It is. It is a very beautiful color. It literally is a tinge of a lime to it, but ever so subtle when you walk up to it. It's very highlighter yellow, but it grew on me as the week went on. For those of you that aren't familiar, this is an off-road rally, the Rebel Rally. It's about 1400 to 1500 miles, mainly all off-road. It's all women, typically about 50 to 52 teams. And I was one of the few electrified vehicles that did this competition. This is my third year competing this year on behalf of Jeep. And we were a team Norwester. There's my lovely navigator. I was the driver for the competition. The gal on the left is Emily Winslow. She's out of Seattle area in Washington. And it was a bone stock a vehicle. We did pretty well. So there it is getting plugged in, and there that light, you can see a little bit more of a tinge of green on it, but a brand new colorway for the 2023 4xe electrified vehicle. So
okay, so the first question here is, was the approach to enter with an electrified vehicle, like, is there a specific class for anything that has a hybrid-ish powertrain? Or
that photo, you might want to just hang on to that photo for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
That needs explanation.
Yeah. It's seen some shit.
It's seen some stuff. Yes, it has. That photo is worth about more than 1,000 words, but I'll get to that in just a second. A couple years ago, the rally had instituted what is called the electrified designation. So it allows electrified vehicles, so it could be anything from a fully electric vehicle, so all electric with no gasoline, assistance, to a plug-in hybrid, to even a regular hybrid, which is interesting. So non-plug-in hybrid vehicle can also be part of this. So it'll be interesting to see if that designation actually changes or not, if it's just only EVs or not. This is interesting because my team, so Emily and myself, separately, we competed in ICE vehicles, so internal combustion engine vehicles, as separate teams in 2018. Then I was media in 2019, where she competed in a separate team with another ICE vehicle. Then we partnered with Volkswagen of America with the first ever all-electric VW ID.4, which is an all-electric crossover.
Remember that?
And so we made history doing that last year in 2021. And then we did a plug-in hybrid, which of course was with Jeep. So we, to my knowledge, were the only team to do all of those three different types of powertrains. So it's interesting because that all evolves, we need to kind of figure out, as the technology evolves and the charging infrastructure or the lack thereof, because it's kind of a rolling temporary thing as you go throughout the desert, how that ends up working and if the destination will change or morph along with it. So. It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Did you experience any difficulties, intricacies, or anything otherwise due to the electrified nature of the Jeep versus the straight electric of the ID4 or prior ICE cars?
Yeah, it was a whole different ballgame. So you were just saying using other people's vehicles for rallies a lot. I use a lot of other people's vehicles for rallies, which is kind of interesting.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, I've used our own Pajero once as a navigator in the 2020 Alcan 5000 rally, which I did with Andy here as a driver. In 2018, I rallied my then partner's husband's work and personal truck. It was a 2012 Toyota Tacoma.
Tacked right off.
Yeah, manual transmission. No pressure there.
Right.
It's fully customized, you know, gutless V6, but it still ran. Brand new clutch because the old clutch gave out during a glamorous practice. But it was a good
truck. At least it was practice.
It was practice when the old clutch gave out. Yes. So we had a brand new clutch that I was babying during an actual rally. But that was the ICE vehicle. And then with the VW, it was all electric and it was all wheel drive derivative. Yeah, exactly. So that was, and it was a great truck. It was a fantastic truck. It was wonderfully dialed in. And so in 2021, when we did the VW ID4, it was the very first time that the all-wheel drive derivative of it came out. So they sent me over to the East Coast to test drive just the stock all-wheel drive derivative. The rear-wheel drive was had earlier come out, and the all-wheel drive variant had just come out 3 weeks before the rally had hit. And so they took literally the all-wheel drive, one of them from that media event, and then shifted over to Respawn Racing on the West Coast and said, okay, we want to do just a couple of quintessentially important but minimal upgrades to it, kept it at stock height, which was 6.7 inches above the ground, sans the full body skid plate.
Very low.
That is not 6.7 is like
very very low, but yeah,
like
they,
regular
and then that was
sedan height.
It was sedan height, but that was also they had that was sans a skid plate too that they put under body as well. So that was minus that too. So we're maybe just a tinge above 6.5. And with that, they didn't really do or have a chance to really do any testing with what does it do off road in this type of condition with the range. And so
you're the guinea pigs.
We were the guinea pigs, yes. I mean, so Tanner Faust did a fully kitted out. You're shaking your heads already. The Nora rig.
We had him on the show.
Did you really? Oh, awesome! Yeah. And I had a chance to work with us for a couple hours with that rig, with some pre-testing a few hours before. I think it was like a day or two before we had a chance to be at the start line with this actual rally rig. And he helped us kind of do the actual driving, you know, off-road with it, some of the tips and tricks that he learned with the Nora rig and translate that into the all-wheel drive derivative. So it was really cool just to meet him and just get some pointers and just be like, there's Tanner. He's teaching me how to drive. Awesome.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
Not a bad teacher.
Not a bad teacher at all. For us, we didn't know how it was going to react in heat. We didn't really know how it was going to react with total range, you know, with extreme terrain. A lot of it would be rocks, some silt, a lot of sand, loose terrain, off camber, you know, just single track. How would it be? Would it use up, you know, 4 kilometers
how does
of range?
Traction control fare in all those conditions with
light
modifications?
We disabled a lot of that because we wanted to make sure that it wasn't safety systems trying to stop you from needing to bump it up over if you needed to.
Bog. Yeah.
So there was a lot of learning on the fly. And Emily Winslow, my navigator, did a phenomenal job just really, you know, understanding, okay, just kind of game planning what she thought. There she is going, yeah, I found a checkpoint. Go back. She's in the foreground. She's hilarious. I love her to death. Love you, Emily. She constantly rechecked. She checked my range. She checked her math and told me to just kind of lay up a little bit, ease up a bit, go a little bit faster. She and we were very, very, very conservative. We never needed a tow out. we probably were too conservative and bowed out of the planned route and kind of came back in and went out and in and out and in versus what you probably should have done to make sure we were not going to lose, because you couldn't really like lose your range and all of a sudden go, oh, I'm dead, and need to tow off a single track
cliff by,
you know. you can't put the semi up there and get a charge, you know. But we made it work. So we never needed a charge, never had any mechanical issues, and it never, you know, it did great. And the Jeep is great. I mean, you know, you basically plug it in. We ran it in all EV mode when it was just low range. I needed full concentration on very tough terrain. Otherwise, we ran it in hybrid.
Interesting.
It's fantastic.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
So you learned as you go. Basically, we learned as we went along, and each vehicle was completely different. So that was a very long answer to your question. But
that's what we're here for.
I know.
Yeah. No, that's good. And it's a totally different. I mean, we're like quietly becoming the unofficial podcast of the Rebel Rally, it seems. And this is a very different side of things, because we've had all electric, we've had, you know, normal ice, and now this is it's a different take. And
the plug-in hybrid.
Yeah, everybody has a different experience too. And hearing side is also always great.
I could talk about just that as far as ice plug-in and all electric for at least an hour, that bit alone, because it's so different.
I heard it good.
we'll put a show on the books to discuss that. So I want to talk about the Alcan and the Wilderness, because the Outback Wilderness has also quietly become kind of like one of the favorites of the off-roading community when the off-roading doesn't necessitate low range.
Right.
Alcan Rally itself is a whole story. So how'd you get involved and what's your psychological investment in this?
Yeah, you need therapy afterwards.
Good kind.
So that's the Outback Wilderness as we first kind of got it. We threw on a Rally Innovations light bar and four Light Force Venom lights. There it is with the full livery on it. I'd always kind of wanted to do this. In 2020, we did it in our own personal vehicle, a 1991 Mitsubishi Pajero with a diesel engine in it. Drove all the way up to the Arctic Ocean in February, March 2020. At the end of the 2020 rally, we had the opportunity to sign up for 2022. We, without hesitation, did so. 2020 was a summer version. It's like the Olympics where they do they'll do a winter, then a summer, then a winter, et cetera. It always makes it 2 years. Yeah. So this year's iteration went from Kirkland, Washington to as far north as Dawson City and Yukon. Went over into Skagway, Alaska, and then as far east as Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, and then finished in beautiful Jasper, Alberta. So, the Outback Wilderness, we partnered with Subaru of America on that one, and I mean, I'm pretty sure that was pretty much the perfect vehicle for the Alcan. Huh. I had enough room for the gear. It had 260 horsepower, so enough power to get going. It had 9.5 inches of ground clearance, which was great for the bad roads and the frost heaves and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And plenty of suspension travel for what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And it was comfortable. I mean, it really was. My only criticism is I would have preferred to have a manual transmission, which you can't get in the Outback Wilderness. It comes with a CVT, but otherwise,
never good.
No, CVTs are great for fuel economy.
You're better with it when you're kicking it over to manual transmission. I mean,
in the actual time sections,
we put it into
the manual mode, but then I would have to remember, you know, okay, well, we're slowing down. We gotta, So the mud up there, the dirt, they put down calcium chloride. And it's unbelievable. It turns into this like adobe, and it's crazy. So, and very dusty, incredible amounts of bugs. It was a great experience. We're already signed up for the 2024 Winter Rally again. Nice. Gonna go do that vehicle TBD, and then but we've already got a car number and looking forward to that. Oh, wow. Just about 400 days until that. Not that I'm counting.
Yeah.
Well, the crazy thing is it's the winter version, so it's a little over a year away. We're literally T minus almost like a little over a year.
That's,
so I'm
that's
already
soon.
Like, yeah, let's do it. I'm like there. Like
you got the bug, and then once it starts, doesn't let up.
Hard.
It's hard. Like it's, I'll tell you, Alcan is it becomes a bit of a fraternity or a
family. It's family.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I meant. Was
there's no hazing.
It becomes a bit of family, slightly dysfunctional, but
you're slightly dysfunctional.
You're among fringe lunatics. Like, what are we doing? Like, I remember the day on the summer Alcan rally where we went 16-hour drive day, and we're just like, I remember getting tired, not tired, exhausted, and just being like, this is supposed to be fun. Why did we do this again? But, you know, it is fun, but it is, there are some very long days, and there's some very challenging drive routes that really do, you don't realize it until you're in the thick of things, and it becomes a psychological day when you're doing these 800-mile drive days. Mm-hmm. Luckily, in the summer when the sun doesn't set until very late, but everyone's like, oh, you'll never bother to use those light force lights. It stays so light. Well, I'll tell you what, we used all four of them and dodged porcupines and deer and all kinds of animals and moose.
Yep.
I don't know if you can see this very easily. This is the, we tried to institute our, we're in the SOP class, so the seat of pants class. It might be kind of hard to see. It's long division for all the time speed distance. So the time speed sections of it, those that, of you that aren't familiar with time speed distance rallying, this is not a go fast, go hard, go long, see who's the quickest to get to your end goal. This is an endurance precision rally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like Andy's saying, you have to be on time, on route, you know.
Accuracy. It's all about accuracy.
Yep. So when he's saying that,
it's
like
chess, not bowling.
Challenge. To just be like, he wants to go on, you know, he wants that immediate, like, you know, that
I want
reaction.
To get down here,
exactly,
or whatever.
Down immediately. And so he needs to finesse it. And so I need to, as a navigator, try to do interim, you know, like intervals to be like, okay, mm-hmm. So I'll read this.
It's
so.
An example, but the Alcan 5000 is a combination of sleep deprivation and long division.
And hunger. And
so, well,
math and, when you're tired and hungry is what I just
yeah said. I mean, yeah. It doesn't tired have to be math. It doesn't have to be fun to be rewarding.
That's not always fun.
And if you lock the steel box for over 5,000 miles with your husband, I love you, honey, or your competitor, and it doesn't matter if it's a summer version like we just did with Subaru, or if it's the winter version like we did in 2020 with our right-hand drive diesel 1990s Pajero, which who would do that in temps of negative 43 below?
It's like different creature comforts.
You know, because we do that. You know, up to the Arctic Ocean. Who does that? Only fringe lunatics. It's not an off-road rally. But this one, especially in the winter version, is an ice and snow rally. But the summer version, like what we did here with Subaru, that was, we did all the gravel and dirt stuff. Yeah, there's 2020, that the vehicle that we own that we did it with. But the 2022 we just got done with Subaru with, we did all the alternative dirt and gravel. That was 1,500 miles, about 1,500 miles of dirt and gravel.
Oh,
that we did.
Oh my gosh.
We drive from Los Angeles to Calgary on nothing but dirt.
What tires were on it?
It came with Yokohama.
It was a stock Yokohamas.
Geolander 015s, which is a tire we've owned before. It's a great tire. Super good in a lot of conditions. So
and
we had zero flats. We carried two full size spares and no flats.
Two full size spares. Because we figured, you know what? If we don't, something's going to happen. If we did, nothing's going to happen.
Of course.
We decided we would, nothing would happen. Right. Nothing did. but they'll carry the weight. So
yeah, it's the better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. But it's always the opposite of what you end up doing.
Totally.
So
people always make fun of all the extra, you know, gear that we end up carrying, and Andy's starting to make these funny luggage cart reviews to the hotel.
Oh yeah, those are very, very good. It's a commentary on how much shit you end up.
But because they make sense. Now you know that we just, you know, we're always prepared. So
yeah,
you know,
understeers anyways. At the limit. So how does
for a luggage cart?
how does the Outback Wilderness tie into the cross track, or does it not in any way?
Good question.
So, yeah, that's a great question. We actually picked up the cross track that we purchased in June, and that's an early version of it where we've got the BF Goodrich KO2s and the Ryka secret wheels on it, but nothing else done there.
Mm-hmm.
But we had we were looking to buy a vehicle that we could hop in and go anywhere at pretty much any time. We have family back in the Midwest, and you know, they're not getting any younger, and there's a modern photo. That's right. We've got the Rally Innovations light bar and the Lightforce lights. We've got the Ryka Seeker wheels, the BF Goodrich KO2s.
That's how it should come from the factory.
Primitive skid plates, nameless stuff on it too.
Exhaust and Craven Speed. Yep. So heavy campers. But so we wanted a vehicle that we could drive at pretty much any time of the year back to the Midwest if we needed to or wanted to. Because before we had that, we had three JDM 30-year-old 4x4s that are all diesels and a lowered Toyota. So
vehicular masochism. Yeah, that's
Toyota. That's with our rally partner's husband,
which we sold to them.
My Rebella.
It was a great vehicle, but it is not a great vehicle to go over the mountain passes in the snow in. And our four-wheel drive JDM stuff is fantastic off-road, and it's plenty comfortable, but it's like 65, 70 miles an hour. And I don't want to get salty back in the Midwest. Like, we drove to Wisconsin for the holidays, and I don't have a problem bringing a brand new vehicle through the salt and stuff like that, wash it. But a 30-year-old JDM Mitsubishi, it's like, I don't want to get it dirty and salty and rusty.
And since then, we've Core 15, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Core 15.
Yep.
So
yep.
We've inhibited all three of our vehicles. We've done that treatment. Thank you, Mark Hatton from MPH Specialties here in Portland. We paid him dearly to treat all of our vehicles, and he's lovingly done it and charged us more every single time we bought their vehicle.
What a business model.
Because he's learned how to now do it every time better. But we've done it since then because we don't want all the rust to get in there.
Yeah.
So. But the project is exactly what we wanted, sans about 100 horsepower. Yeah. But it goes, it'll do 80, 85 miles an hour in Idaho and Montana and stuff like that. It gets decent fuel economy. It's capable, especially with the BF Goodrich tires on there. It does exactly what we wanted it to do.
Now, if Subaru was to do a Wilderness version of the Crosstrek and keep the stick shift in it with more horsepower, so have the Outback engine or turbo,
At least 10.
I've been saying since the Crosstrek came out.
Because we wanted to roll our own gears. We wanted, when mandated, because everything we've ever owned has been a stick shift. Both of us.
That's a track record.
So we're the only two.
I've been saying since the Crosstrek came out, if they built, at the time, the joke was like a Crosstrek WRX or STI, but if they built one and it had ground clearance and a turbo and a stick and like some kind of, protective armor in any way, shape, or form, I would buy one. Literally dozens of us.
Think of the sales number.
You know how many journalists are right here on this podcast?
Yes. It's like
you guys have probably heard those like the joke about like they should make the journalist special editions, right? It's brown, it's the manual, brown Volkswagen wagon, Jetta
yeah.
wagon,
yeah,
diesel with the 6-speed. You know, it's like, yeah. Oh yeah, dozens of sales. So
yeah, okay. Would well, you, so go ahead.
You can buy a brown BMW like that, I think.
Well, you used to be able to buy a brown Volkswagen Jetta wagon diesel with the manual for like, you know, 2 years or something like that. It was probably only sold to people who write about cars.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Or that stupid W8 all-wheel drive stick wagon they made for like, I don't know, a day.
Yeah.
I realized that it was.
I think it was.
It was a Passat wagon, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, we're getting close to Derek Powell territory here with weird German wagons.
Hi, I just saw that.
You literally just saw it in person, actually.
Yeah, yeah. He drove through.
Yeah.
So the only way I see anybody is you have to be driving through the Midwest and then you stop, I feed you, and we move on.
We'll go to that next time.
Yeah.
Wisconsin, you know. That's where I'm from.
Right. But I'm way south of Wisconsin.
Very south. Yeah.
But yeah. We're low. We're like upper, lower.
Yeah, we've gotten into this before on the show where like people from Ohio are like, I'm from the Midwest. And I was like, I don't think that's the Midwest. Like, dude, I'm midway to the West. Like
I saw something like on Reddit today and somebody said, why doesn't the Midwest just get absorbed into the Northeast? I was like, you ever looked at
God,
that?
No.
Which, more than you for than any. Yeah, no.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not good. Been my favorite reels lately. It's like the Midwest version of pickleball, and they have the Wisconsin accents and they're drinking beer the whole time and they murder the athletic people who show up to play pickleball. It's fantastic to me.
Well, yeah.
So back to just 2 seconds. So Andy and I used to be part of a bowling league when we both lived in Wisconsin. Of course, that's one of the things that you did.
You can't get a driver's license without being on a bowling
league. Yeah.
Monday night drunks, and it was actually
on Wednesday night.
On Wednesday night, so, but it was apparently a drinking league that liked to bowl.
Yes.
So that was their whole shtick, but you know.
Yeah, I've been a part of a rowing team in college that was a drinking team that also rowed. So yeah. Yeah. With
yep. The dude abides. Anyways, can we talk about Warren for a few minutes?
Sure.
Any fun new innovations, updates? Stuff in the pipeline that you can share or just power through?
We have a lot of really cool things in the pipeline that I cannot talk about. So one of the things that we do sell these days, one of the lesser known products is wheels. We sell our line of Warren Epic wheels. Those are a 17 by 8.5, 3 different styles, 2 different finishes, 2 different bolt patterns. So you've got your 6 on 139.7 for your Ford Broncos. For your new Toyota Tundras, a host of other vehicles. And then we have the 5 on 127 for the Wrangler JL, the Gladiator, and the JK. So those are our best-selling model, the Jackhammer, but we have 3 other styles available in a black and a gunmetal gray finish. They're all going to be a zero offset. So works with factory lug nuts, works with TPMS. So we also have the hub. The center cap looks sort of like the Warren hubs. The 4-wheel drive hubs is a
that's
those are available with in gold. The hub cap, the caps are, but they're also an option, a red one. Gold's not a thing. So
yeah, always forget about that. I mean, in the same way that like Icon makes wheels, and I'd always forget that Icon makes wheels. You know, it's companies branching out, but no, that's exciting stuff. I mean,
right. So the other thing too is that we now have 4 brands under the same ownership. So we've got Fact 55. Yeah, those are going to be the anyway,
sorry,
six low. That's okay. Those are our diamond cutters. Anyway, we're 4 brands now. So of course we have Warren Industries. Then we have Factor 55 that makes rigging equipment. We have Fab Fours, which makes bumpers. A couple of other products, roof racks, bed racks. And then we also have Fat Tech Suspension that makes a whole host of different suspension options, everything from just sort of a upgraded shock absorber to full-on remote reservoir coilovers, that kind of thing called Dirt Logic. So We're growing the brands, growing kind of expanding into some new territory, which is always exciting. So
I did not realize that you had FabTech.
Yep.
Or Fab Force. That is definitely interesting.
Yeah.
Ross is now thinking about suspension.
I'm like, I had no idea. It's crazy. Like, you learn this stuff like as you go, you know. I mean, shit, talk about all the companies that WheelPros has absorbed over the years. Yeah. You know?
No kidding. But, yeah, those tie rods and whatnot for the Bronco won an award at SEMA. So that's cool. But
why did the early Broncos have tie rod problems? Probably overblown because of the internet, but they were.
That aftermarket companies manufactured a solution. Yes, they did. Yes.
There were some videos that got out there of the stock tie rods on, you know, 35s and 37s not having their best days.
I've seen it happen in person. So
yeah,
but thankfully the aftermarket comes a calling. So, so we've got a whole host of products outfit a variety of vehicles these days. So. So that's probably the biggest deal, is that we're all kind of under one roof. We're all separate companies. We all operate separately, but we're all through the same ownership.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. On the topic of winches, since that's kind of what draws it all back together.
Right.
Are you seeing the shift to synthetic with the ferocity that the aftermarket world makes it seem like is happening, or are there still people who live and die by steel?
The answer is yes to both. I mean, there's a
fair enough.
There's a huge shift to synthetic rope with good reason. It's lightweight, easy to handle, that kind of stuff. Doesn't hold the potential energy under tension, that kind of stuff. As somebody who's pulled a lot of cable and teaches winching classes, I would much rather work with synthetic rope any day. It's just easier. It doesn't bird's nest, all that.
It doesn't cut the shit out of you the same way if you're not wearing the right gloves, which
I've
never done that ever.
Wear gloves, because I've had rope. Everybody's had rope burn who's ever used a rope. And that goes for power sports and truck. But steel cable still has its place. Steel cable is exceptionally abrasion resistant. I can take out my knife and cut a length of synthetic rope. I can't do that with steel cable. So there's a reason like tow truck operators are still using steel cable, because it drags around on the ground all day. If you're using a winch to skid logs or using it in a very high abrasion environment, using it for utility purposes, steel cable can still be a great option for you, because you don't have to worry about that abrasion. If you're using synthetic, you need to lay down something to prohibit that abrasion. It'll save the life of the rope, that kind of thing.
There's little sleeves, right?
Abrasion sleeves. Yeah. If you don't have that, put a floor mat down over that stump you're winching over, anything. So but synthetic is definitely become more popular.
There was an interesting conversation on one of the, I can't remember if it was a forum or a Facebook page the other day, but somebody came up with a winch bumper for the GX. And I can't for the life of me remember if it was a 460 or the 470, but the angle at which the fairlead was pitched basically made like a ridge over which there was abrasion if you had a synthetic cable, and it was just causing abrasion right from the start. And all the comments were like, hope you're doing steel. And it's like, and the company kind of responded was like, didn't think that through. So there's a place for things.
You know, we advocate for having a fair lead where the rope passes over at a 90 degree. You see some that are at a 45 or a different angle.
Not good.
It's going to be the least degradation on the rope if you have it at that 90 degree. I think we even may have one option, or maybe I'm not even sure, but I think most of ours, if not all of them, do have it at a near 90. So, but you know,
it's trigonometry. It's like,
it's the other thing too.
High school math.
Having a large radius fairly. So a fairly that has a big bend on the opening is going to help reduce that as well. Fact 55 and Warren both all sell that. Well, you get the, some of the cheaper winches, and it's almost a, just a sharp 90. That's the stuff that really just wears on synthetic rope. And we sell our steel rope with roller fairings. So,
okay. On the topic of the Factor 55 stuff, I have a Factor 55. I don't even know what it's called. It replaces the hook.
And I
still haven't swapped it over. So what are the benefits of getting rid of the hook itself and going to, I mean, what Factor 55 is basically made popular and famous in the off-road and overall community. Is there, aside from, you know, not a piece of hunk of metal, is there any other benefit?
Absolutely, yeah. So if you look up the term closed system winching, Factor 55 came up with this idea of called closed system winching. So instead of using a hook that has a safety clasp, I don't have a hook right here with me, but yeah, I have one right over there. But anyway, if you have a hook that has a latch, right? It's a spring-loaded latch, right?
Mm-hmm.
That can fail under certain instances. The Factor 55 product uses what they call closed system winching. So winching, so you're taking a shackle and running the pin directly through a hole in that shackle mount. That closes that, and it's not possible. There's no link, or there's no safety clasp. So a shackle would go right through that hole and then secure it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way for that safety latch to be damaged in the winching process. So in that respect, it creates a more secure connection and just takes a variable out of the winching equation. So Warren has sold winches with hooks since 1959, and it wasn't until later that they started putting the safety clasp on there. And the Factor 55 is a different way to do stuff. It's all American made, all super, super durable. They do a ton of testing, a ton of destructive testing. It's a super, super good product. Plus, it does look good. They're available in a whole host of colors to accessorize with the vehicle. So different way of doing things, more secure way of doing
things. Cool. That's good to know, and is now on my to-do list.
Good call.
Yeah, dude, it's been in the trunk of the Lexus since I got it, and I'm just like, maybe someday. So I'll make that.
You're one snap ring plier set away from putting that on.
Well, that is about 12 feet from where the truck sits, so. Beautiful.
Perfect.
So, Chris, you have any other stuff you want to run through? Any other...
Dude, it took me forever to try to find a worn hook with the safety latch photo large enough to share. Yeah.
I have so many small of those red things, whatever they are, like the...
Hook stretch out.
This, yeah, I have, like... I don't know how I end up with a collection of those things. I must have, like, 5 or 6 of them. You know,
sounds like keychains.
Yeah, keychains. They make great luggage strap.
Luggage strap. That's a good idea.
A little fun trivia bit about those is they're not just like this clever little marketing thing that hangs off. It's designed to be grabbed onto as you're spooling the winch line back into the vehicle to keep your hands and fingers away from the opening. It's actually a quite highly engineered piece because they've designed the opening on it to not slip off the hook. And they've designed it to be the right amount of grab and distance away from that fairing. So more than just a clever marketing ploy, it's a functional piece. Also good to keep your co-driver away to slap them on the leg.
Noted.
It's funny.
Duly noted.
I'll get those people. They're like, what are these things? And I'm like, oh, you take these. And when your passenger starts sleeping, you slap on the leg. Looking like, really? No,
we've been in the car too long together.
It has
rally days, you know,
16 hours of rally.
We don't condone violence on this show, but this might get a pass.
See, that's where because I live in 4-kid world all the time. I'm like, sleeping passengers is the best thing ever.
Oh yeah,
don't wake them up. Let them sleep. You want that peace?
Only one car that my kid has failed to fall asleep in, and that was the X3M competition, which rode like a freaking dump truck.
That poor girl.
compressed vertebrae, but they didn't fall asleep. So.
She's young. She can walk it off.
Yeah.
Walk.
Like us.
All right. Chris, any other stuff for our topics
for
and conversation tonight? Well,
we had an ultimate overland adventure.
Oh, yeah. While Mercedes was doing the Revell rally, I was on the overland adventure. I was on the overland adventure through Four Wheeler magazine, where we went through all the California desert and explored a whole bunch of historical places. I took my 92 Mitsubishi Pajero along with my little Danute trailer with a rooftop tent on it. It was mine for a few days.
That was this year's overland. So I mean, we know Holman was there, right? He kind of runs it. So
we own two Pajeros. That's our other one. We both own them. It's kind of a his and hers, we jokingly say, but they're both ours.
The one not pictured prior from Alcan that's on FJ Wheels.
That was sort of hers, but
So this is the first one we bought, which was kind of his, and then I got jealous and I was wanting to off-road and everything. So the dark gray one, which is more masculine style, kind of ended up as mine, which is the one that ended up at the Arctic Circle in the middle of winter.
Huh. Weird how that happens. Competition.
So anyway, I took this one on the Overland Adventure, and it was about 2,400 total miles. Well, about 3,300 miles, including getting down there with the trailer. It's the only time I've ever been happy that the speed limit in California is 55 when towing. So because this thing is not fast, we swapped in a Hyundai D4 BF turbo diesel into it. It came with a turbo diesel, but we had a problem with it. And we ended up swapping in a brand new engine. So it's not fast, but it's very reliable and very dependable.
If you look up hashtag Terra Tractor, T-E-R-R-A Tractor, you'll find the Alcan, my Pajero, and then that'll be a quick way to take a look at.
And the one's called the Rally Tractor, R-A-L-L-I.
Also, speaking of diesel-swapped trucks, was Adam from Overland History also on this rally with you guys?
Just with you, Andy? Yep. He was there in his, I believe it's a 5-cylinder Mercedes-Benz-powered Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah.
So, he's been on the show. Big guy, awesome rig. So.
Twice? We haven't had one, but I think he's been on twice.
Yeah.
So, okay. So prior to the trailer, were you just ground tenting, or did you have the tent on the Pajero?
We've had the trailer with the rooftop tent on it for a long time, actually. We have a ground tent. That's James Tester in his super awesome V-Cross. Super good dude.
How long has he had that? And is it possibly the one that I used to own?
I don't know if you own that or not. He's got a number of Isuzu vehicles, so kind of like we're fringe lunatics with Mitsubishi stuff. He's like that with Isuzu.
I want to drive a V-Cross. I know two people now that own a V-Cross. I want to drive one.
It's not great. It's really not great.
I have no desire.
But the V-Cross, the thing that you don't realize about the V-Cross is that it basically sits on the bump stops, so it has all down travel and pretty much no up travel from factory ride height, which means that every time you hit a pothole or an imperfection, it just compacts and bounces your head into the headliner.
So our Pajeros are the opposite, that where I have up travel and no down travel.
So, how tall are you?
I was like 5'10" before I had a
disc Ross is normal,
mostly removed from my back.
Oh, okay. So you're several inches taller than me, so I probably don't have the issue of
it. Yeah, it's awesome truck. Love it. We'll happily own another one, but driving it is not the best.
Good enough.
I think they're super, super duper cool. It's not a vehicle that's on my to own list, but really?
it starts with an I and not an M. So
I think they're super cool. So
They are. They're eclectic, which turns out is what this show does best.
Yeah, we like eclectic. That it seems like their rally was a great mix of just different off-roaders.
Yeah, it was. There was a little bit of everything. There were forward. There was a forward-controlled Jeep with a V8 in it.
That's the concept truck.
No, it's not the concept.
That's not the Eastern Jeep Safari truck.
I saw this thing at SEMA back in like 2012. This thing's amazing. Like it is. Yeah, it's like 2013.
Super cool V8 350 Chevy swap in it. There were JKs, JLs, Gladiators. There was Adam's Jeep with the diesel. The Via Cross, there were Super Duties, Land Cruisers,
Disco.
There was the gentleman with the
that's a van.
Sportsmobile. It was, and there was the Rogue Overland had their Nissan Envy. Super.
We've
cool.
had a oh god, what's his name? We had him on the show like probably two and a half years ago.
I think it's Nick.
Oh, what is? Yeah, I think you're right. That was a long. Oh, yeah, that was.
He didn't even have this van yet. It was. We were still talking.
It was just the Xterras. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we had the Girl Scout. She's got the Scout there, which was super cool too. Even an old OJ Bronco. Hell yeah. And it was it was a lot of fun. James's V-Cross, you know, just so cool. On 35s, I think I'm 35.
Oh god, that must have been a miserable time making 35s.
Were involved in the Desert Training Center, you know, before World War II, and a lot of history. So,
yeah, that sounds awesome.
This was like the unofficial four wheeler send off, too.
Yeah, which nobody actually knew, except which was kind of, you know, kind Sean. Of ironic that we did this last trip and then. You know, like a month and a half, 2 months later, it's like, whoa, they're stopping the print publications. Like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
Yeah. Well, opportunities for another to step in, maybe. I don't know.
There's probably not going to be a shortage of overland trips and stuff, but four wheeler had a history. Mercedes and I had done the JP Magazine Dirt and Drive in 2017 and 2018. You know, they have Ultimate Adventure, which Warren has been a part of for many years. And this overland adventure, which we've done for I think two or three.
Well, and I've written a couple pieces, for a four wheeler. So, you know, you never know.
Yeah.
Never know what'll happen.
Yep. Until somebody creates another Top Truck Challenge, just doors open.
Cheap Truck Challenge or Top Truck Challenge?
No, I think it was Top Truck Challenge was the one where it was
Top Truck Challenge. Yeah.
It was anything goes. And it was chaos.
Sounds like I have some Googling to do later.
You have some YouTubing to watch.
It was very cool. For what it's worth too, Mountain Mafia out of Idaho, they put on it's called Mountain Havoc, HAVOC. And they kind of took that Top Truck Challenge idea and still do it. They put out some pretty wicked videos and they have some insane vehicles.
These look like rock bouncers in the air. Like
there's kind of some of them have the rock bouncer thing going on. Well, some of them are just crazy capable. So
also, oh god, and man, I'm really struggling with names tonight. The guy from Truck Night in America,
Patrick,
that we had
Costello.
Yes, yeah, Patrick. Yeah, we had him on the show, and Truck Night in America is basically the same thing, you know, just
right.
I love for TV.
I love the air tube over the top.
Right.
I can feel that in my spine.
It's
anything but the shock.
Yeah, big old shocks. I think I can't tell, but it looks like that might be on like one tons, and you know they just get it done. So,
Idaho's cool. I haven't been to Idaho before, and you get up there.
Oh man,
I mean this in the best way possible. That it's definitely the Texas of the Pacific Northwest. So.
I have friends who live up there, and that makes a lot of sense, actually.
I know it's got a lot to offer. So.
Yeah, duly noted. It's like Texas with more mountains.
I was looking at pictures of Big Bend National Park today, and I think it's on my in the next
Me too.
5
I
years
I
want
to get to Big Bend.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's
If you guys come through,
yeah, Chris, yeah, we'll just get there.
Yeah,
we could You know what we should do? I don't know why I haven't thought of this sooner. We should do an off the road again adventure. Like We've had so many different people from the community. Hey, shit, how many did we come up with this? I mean, plus all the rebel, like Emmy and Rebecca and all them and Lynn. Heck, like, yeah, we could probably plus do something.
Yeah. There, we have generally talked. We haven't talked to someone in every state, but we're getting close.
We are. We've been talking, actually, and I'm going to send this your way too. We've been talking about doing a map, like a map of the globe, and the guests are going to put in where they've been, and we're going to hopefully eventually.
The hard part of that is it's literally a globe, because we've talked to Greg when he was down under, and Joel's down there still.
Oh, nice. Yes. Side note, Greg is back. And
okay,
he's actually in your time zone. He's in the in Western Canada right now. So
I think he's in Whitehorse.
Yeah.
Yes, he will return shortly.
Sweet. So I'm gonna wrap up the show real fast. Yeah. I'm gonna wrap it up before Ross does all the technical producery stuff on the show.
Yeah, right.
We send emails about this stuff.
We do. Anyway, my tired brain is doing
it. You're good. It's late. It's fine. You can rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We're generally just about everywhere. You can like and subscribe on YouTube. For Andy and Mercedes, there are a number of social accounts. So we generally go with Crankshaft Culture, right? We just start there. And then it's Andy_Lilienthal and Mercedes_Lilienthal. Both are Instagram. If you want to talk to them on Twitter, you can get there. Most of Crankshaft Culture, but you stop at Colt.
Yes.
And then Mercedes.
Crankshaft Cult goes to me. Crankshaft Mercedes Cult is Writer with Grit on Twitter.
Yep. And you can follow Hooniverse, the real Hooniverse on Instagram, the Hooniverse on Twitter. Ross is No Not Like, the one from Friends. I'm at Overlanding Dad. And that's it. We've done a show. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it.